ladies and gentlemen, in chapter 15 of the unveiling. 8 verses. And so I'm going to read the rest of the chapter today. And then I'm going to actually start on verse 1 of chapter 16, maybe today. And I'm also going to get very close to you. We've never been more intimate. You and I have never been this close to a microphone ever. I may regret it, but I have never cared less about my appearance, have I? I am focused on the things of God right now. I like the fact that the last 7 bowls are finally going to be poured out here. I feel like John. I don't know about you, but I feel like John throughout this unveiling, actually going into these times, living them. I feel like I've been living them before they actually happen. And it's a rare privilege that God is opening that curtain up for us. We're taking these things literally. And so it's been trying because of the terrible things that happen. But it's caused us, I think, it's caused me to reflect on my evangel and the fact that the unveiling is not my evangel. And John goes, well, John doesn't, but the 7 messengers review for Israel the Song of Moses. I think this is very interesting. I'm going to read that again from chapter 15. I perceived another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, 7 messengers having the last 7 calamities. The last 7. Not going to make fun of that anymore. I kind of got upset yesterday. Oh, by the way, why am I wearing the same shirt today? It's a sweater, actually. It's got a nice stripe down the side here. Do you see that? Because I could only bring 2 shirts with me. Having the last 7 calamities, seeing that in them God's fury is consummated. I thought maybe I had seen the last 7 calamities before, because there are so many calamities in this book. I realize now that I had not seen the last of the calamities, and that there were more. There are 7 thunders, 7 seals, and now there are going to be 7 bowls poured out. Bowls. Why a bowl? Bowl was an instrument of the altar, and we are in the worship section. We are in the temple section of the unveiling. That's why there are bowls. And so as terrible as these bowls are, as terrible as the judgment is, these bowls are related to temple service, to worship. I must continually remind you that God is out to reestablish his worship on the earth. When the temple was in place in Israel, there was worship, but it was only in one little building on the planet. At that time, that building was a microcosm of what God was going to do on the planet. Because during the millennium, the earth will be as the temple, because the worship of God will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. Yes, there will still be a temple in Jerusalem, but the worship of Jehovah won't be isolated to that place. That will simply be the headquarters from which the worship goes forth. But true, 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 it is forced worship. I admit that to you. I'm not saying anything else, because this is an iron club rule that is happening during the millennium. Rules with an iron club. And worship is forced. The tithes are still in effect, I think. At the end of yesterday's show, I told you we have no tithes. We don't operate by any system of the law. Yet here, the 7 messengers are going back to the Song of Moses. And we're going to look at the Song of Moses because it's applicable to this. Now, the Song of Moses isn't repeated here. But here's how it goes. Listen to this. And I perceived, as it were, a glassy sea. I went crazy over that yesterday because I love the glassy sea. I'm going to think of myself from now on as walking on a glassy sea. I know it's circumcision writing. I know it's for Israel. But I'm going to steal it, gosh darn it. I'm going to steal the glassy sea, and I'm going to apply it to myself. the glassy sea being the firmament of Paul's gospel. I'm justified. I'm saved from sin. I can't be condemned. And I'm standing on that. And I look down and I see all the fish, right? So if it's a glassy sea, like those glass boats you have in Florida or Hawaii, the tourists get on the glass boats, and really great invention. You can see the sea and the fish, and it's so cozy. I've never been on one, but I can imagine. I'm trying to imagine it right now. Imagine looking down, seeing like sharks and whales and porcupines. Oh, no, they're on the land. Octopuses. Octopi? Yeah. And various stinging creatures like man-o-war. Is that the plural? And jellyfish. And yet not them not being able to get you. That is perfectly descriptive of the beauty of our calling. We have a sheen of God that surrounds us. Yes, it does. It surrounds us and nothing can get us. It's like we're operating in the world, but we're not of the world. You get me? We're in the world, but not of the world. So even we're on the glassy sea, and we can see the sharks right under there, and they're trying to get us, but they can't. They cannot get us. We are protected, divinely sealed. That makes me think of the 144,000. They have a lot fewer issues than some of these folks, like the vast throng, because they're sealed. So these conquerors have come that way by a hard route. And yet, after having conquered, this is the difference between them and us. After having conquered, after having overcome, they are seen as standing on a glassy sea. We began our glassy sea existence 2,000 years ago when Jesus Christ was crucified and we were considered to have been baptized in his death. Of course, time progressed, we were born, and now we're born onto the glassy sea. We don't conquer and get to stand on the glassy sea as if it's a reward for good behavior or good service. No, but rather, we were born onto it. We came out on it. And it only remained for someone to tell us about it. And Paul was that man. And he died having told several people of it, but he died not knowing that we were going to be here. And so as soon as someone showed us Paul's gospel, we realized that the whole time we had been on a glassy sea, and it was religion that lied to us. Religion via Satan cannot do anything to take away what Jesus Christ did on the cross, but can do everything to keep us from an apprehension of it, from a realization of it. That's why Paul uses the word realization more than any other Bible writer. He wants this, he prays for the saints to come to a realization of the truth. And that is my goal for you and for myself. I have to do it for myself first, as I've told you before. And they are singing the song of Moses, those who are standing on the glassy sea, singing the song of Moses. What is shocking that this is happening in the middle of this turmoil. Just fantastic. And we went through that. But this is the law of Moses. What I read yesterday, and I kind of mocked because it didn't rhyme, wasn't a good song. That's not the song of Moses. They are singing the song of Moses, slave of God, and the song of the Lambkin, saying. So what I read yesterday and stupidly made fun of, that's not the song of Moses. That was the song of the Lambkin. And so the song of Moses is not incorporated into the unveiling. But so there's a big time period here where these messengers were singing the law of Moses. Basically, it was a review of the career of Israel. Moses was also a prophet. He fixed stuff then. He set up the law. He wrote the law. But then his words went from the present to predictive, and he became a prophet. And the Song of Moses not only reviewed the history of Israel, touched on the present, but it went into the future. And Moses, listen to this, predicted the bowls, predicted the trials that Israel would be coming into in these last days. I'm going to read the rest of chapter 15. That's right. Today, I'm going to read the rest of chapter 15. And after these things, I perceived, and the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony was opened in heaven. And the seven messengers who have the seven calamities came out of the temple dressed in clean, resplendent linen, and girded about the chest with golden girdles. Girdles, it's just something that girds. I can't help thinking of the Playtex girdle commercials I saw when I was a kid. Those things that control a woman's figure. Well, it's the same thing here, really. Except with men, it was a really preparation for war. You girded your weapons about you. You girded your loins in a figurative way. You bucked up. You cinched your nerve, and you prepared yourself for battle. But these messengers are girded with golden girdles, and that speaks of worth, it speaks of value, speaks of something that cannot be corrupted. And what is it? The Word of God. The Word of God is our gold, and it's their gold, and they're girded about with the Word of God. This is my take on it. And one of the four animals, remember the four animals? Go back to show number one and listen to all the shows up to this show, which is show 399. Can you believe that? And you will read about you'll hear about the four animals. These are representatives of the animal kingdom at the throne of God. They're extremely spiritual beings. They represent the Lollipop Guild. No, sorry. They represent the animal kingdom on the earth. And they provide a great service to God, which reminds me to tell you that I believe animals are going to be a much higher state during the millennium. It's going to be fantastic. Can't wait to see that. So these four animals are seen again. They give to the seven messengers seven golden bowls brimming with the fury of God. Again, bowls related to the temple. Thank God. Thank God bowls are related to the temple. We're in the temple section, so this is not divorced at all from worship of the deity. Brimming with the fury of God. But there's a comma there. Hang on. God, comma, who is living for the eons of the eons. Does this mean that God dies after the eons are completed? God is living for the eons of the eons. Does that limit him in any way? No. We know that God has no beginning and no end. This just assures us that he is the God of the eons. He's a God who cares about time. If you say the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, does that limit him to those patriarchs? If I tell you that he is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, as Jesus said, oh no, he's not my God. It just says he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. No, he's everyone's God, but this is giving specific information that he's especially the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they are the big three of Israel. So the God who lives for the eons of the eons is not a God who dies after the eons are completed. The message here is that he is involved. He is vitally connected, vital, life, living. Right? Living for the eons of the eons. He's vitally connected with our time periods. He knows your days. He knows your seasons. He knows your minutes, knows your hours, knows the seconds of your life, and he knows the times of Israel. This is a hugely comforting statement here. Who is living for the eons of the eons? Who is living for the eons of the eons? Talk to most people today and God is dead. There was actually a movement called God is Dead. Well, he's not dead. He is living for the eons of the eons. And as I said in last Sunday's newsletter, he does not start creation and give up on it. He sustains it second by second with his spirit. It not only infuses our bodies, but by his spirit, all things cohere. Colossians 1:17. And so this is a great comfort to Israel, and I want it to be a comfort to you as well, knowing that nothing happens without the Involvement's a work, weak word. Without the active sustaining force, causing power of God, because he lives. That's the aorist tense, lives. It's not that he lives, it's not that he will live, he lives. That's what he does, he lives. Lest you think he only lives before time or after time, that he's stuck in some eternal, spooky, weird thing that we can't grasp. You need to know that he's here. He surrounds everything. He's the God of time. Doesn't mean he's the God of not time. Just specific information here that's helpful for people who are going through hell and who think that possibly God has forsaken them. He has not. And if he has not forsaken Israel, he sure as heck has not forsaken us.